Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, my eye is slowly healing, but it will be a while before I can take myself out for adventures or interviews again. So I hope you got to enjoy some good food and company this week, and that you survived Black Friday. Congratulations. Our days this week look to be warmer than usual, but we are staying seasonal with the latest Desert Oracle Radio episode from Ken Lane. It was released November 25th, 2024, and he calls it Ravens, Quails, and Turkeys.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and it sure got cold fast. That's the October surprise of the high desert. Or November surprise, if that's when it happens. What random day after a heat wave will it suddenly get very cold with snow flurries and the whole deal? And that's the surprise every year. I hope you enjoyed the season of fall, which lasted 2 or 3 days or so as usual. It happened on a Sunday where I was. A very nice autumn. I'll miss it. But here we are, a month later, headed towards the end of November and another year, and it is so beautiful outside that it can make a grown man cry. Especially if the wind is blowing a lot of dust and other filth into his eyes. This last Sunday, this glorious Sunday, I take my coffee and my book outside and sit in the sunshine, mostly ignoring the book because it's just so nice out. But there's a low murmuring, a low mumble of creatures, too. I slowly notice it. It takes me a minute to figure it out. The Joshua tree closest to me, maybe 30 feet away on the right, is suspiciously dark about the branches. And then I pick out this one sleek black head and realize there are several ravens crowded together in there, hiding, muttering to each other. But the muttering is coming from across the road, too. And from the big Joshua tree about 20 feet to my left. And as soon as I see that one big raven head, I've apparently ruined their hiding game as great black crowds of ravens simultaneously rise from all the Joshua trees around me. Must be 100 birds. Big corvids with their dark wings a-flapping. Up they go like a whirlwind. They are a whirlwind, a clockwise winding cloud of ravens. They rise ever higher, talking and cackling all the while. As several other groups fly in from all directions, the four winds, until one of those notorious desert raven parties is right overhead, hundreds of big blackbirds. It breaks up within a couple of minutes, 5 minutes, and once again I am alone, One of those moments when I'm reminded again that the world is wondrous and strange. And that our corvid cousins engage in great social games of play and competition and organized sport that we struggle to describe with the dull modern language of consensus science. Corporate science, academic science, the magic of life reduced to committee-approved words and numbers on spreadsheets and unread footnotes. Why do the ravens engage in such complex games? Why were they all hiding in the branches, still as stones? And nothing but whispers from their generally loud mouths. What signal sent them rising up that way? I wonder. But I have no sense of urgency about it. My wonder is not a question. It's the wonder of awe, of being awestruck once again by these mysterious animals. With the dark flapping threat of the ravens gone, the quail gingerly emerge from the brush and begin their pecking and squeaking and bobbing around, kicking up the dust, somehow finding enough seeds to keep them sleek and plump so long after the springtime. I think of Thanksgiving birds roasting in the oven and how years ago I went to a dinner party out in Wonder Valley at this artist's house, and they had the chef from this hipster restaurant in Los Angeles there to cook up a feast. And he was a funny redneck character, and he'd spent that morning out in the dry wash, getting his limit, so everybody had their own roasted quail for dinner, along with all kinds of other delicacies I can't remember. The restaurant later became infamous on the internet because its famous jam preserves were covered in mold. And the restaurant's fans all pounced in a great mob of hatred. The people were glad for the misfortune because the restaurant was guilty of gentrification, was the story. 20 and 20. Very strange year.
Desert Oracle Radio.
This is Desert Oracle Radio with the soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. I hear he's back in his old hometown, like he goes back to every Thanksgiving. He dresses as a giant turkey with a tricorn, like a colonial hat, at the children's fair over there. So go by and say hi if you're going there on Thanksgiving Eve. Open 10 p.m. Thanksgiving Eve. Lots of news right now. Everybody's talking about the big story, which is we hear the road through Mojave National Preserve has been restriped, maybe even partially resurfaced in one of those sections that got washed out recently. No road looks better with a fresh layer of blacktop and that golden yellow double line winding between the Joshua Tree foothills. They say that sorrow makes the miserable satisfied and that even the losers get lucky sometimes. I have heard that some of you are upset about the recent election. Now, Brant McDougall should have never been elected town dog catcher, and that McDougall is not even a real name, and that there are more loose dogs and prowling pit bulls than ever. But as of press time, they are still counting votes in San Bernardino County, so for now, we're just going to have to make it on our own. Catch the dogs ourselves. Lots of people still come out to Joshua Tree and 29 Palms and Yucca Valley and all that before the Thanksgiving or the Christmas holidays, sometimes both. Especially if their parents live out here and have a nice big house with a big kitchen and three or four uncles who never leave the football game on the TV until the turkey hits the table. But in a godforsaken desert like the Mojave, a turkey seems an unlikely animal that you'd come across unless it comes directly from the freezer case at Stater Brothers. But here's a little bit of history regarding Joshua Tree, the grand bird of the Republic, the turkey. Perhaps while you were exploring the national park, Joshua Tree National Park, you've noticed a place down there by Pinto Basin called Turkey Flats. And you might think that's just another goofy place name, the long ago result of some old miner who famously longed for turkey but had to make do with jackrabbit stew. Something folksy like that. But it was the site of an early 20th century turkey farm. In the days before the desert became a beautiful landscape in the eyes of people with credit cards and Airbnb reservations, Californians tried to grow just about everything in the desert, including turkeys, successfully for a while. This is from the National Park Service. Local folklore holds that in the 1920s, an enterprising poultry farmer believed a turkey farm would do nicely here, thus the name Turkey Flats. Lack of water and distance from markets, however, proved otherwise. Well, so much for that. I'll tell you another little bit of lore about Turkey Flats, though, before we get to the other turkey farms. It is said that way out there on the far side of Turkey Flats, there is a gravesite of the unknown turkey. It's marked with a little pile of rocks. So Turkey Flats was not the only spot around here where the Thanksgiving birds were farmed. Much more successful was the collection of large poultry farms in North Joshua Tree, the Sunfair part of town, where it's real hot and flat. An area that was known for decades as, that's right, Turkey Town, USA, Joshua Tree's real name. That's the truth. It even shows up on old AAA maps from the 1940s. Turkey Town, USA. According to the Green Acres Ranch vacation rental, which was also a turkey farm, but closer to Copper Mountain Highway 62, Sunfair's Turkey Town consisted of 19 separate poultry farms with an average population of 47,000 turkeys, which is the exact human population of the Morongo Basin today. What does it all mean? Apparently had a big national election as well, pleasing some and outraging others, but mostly is just another day for the working people of America. Another day in the salt mines, the Walmarts, the diploma mills. As it should be. This national hysteria, something that used to only happen every 4 years, has become an affliction that now lasts not only through the campaign season, but for the entirety of the 4 years before and after. Constant craziness. But if you look at the news or social media or whatever, it's all anybody's talking about. Apparently no other news on Earth. I advise tuning it out. Unless you're having fun with it all, then have fun. It can be fun to count back through all the U.S. presidents of your life. I had Lyndon Baines Johnson, Richard Nixon for not quite two terms, Gerald Ford for a minute, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan for 8 years, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, he also got 8 years, and various circus event impeachments, George W. Bush, for a double term with the great American hero Dick Cheney and their various catastrophic global wars, according to the History Channel. Barack Obama for a double term. Donald Trump for one chaotic term, fading into the fever dream pandemic years. Joe Biden in there somewhere, wondering where he is. We're wondering where we are. Nobody knows what's going on. And now Donald Trump again. Still the only person to go from a top-rated primetime TV series about himself to two non-consecutive terms as United States president. I strongly advise not becoming a politics nut, not knowing a bunch of political campaign trivia like, unfortunately, I do. Unless it's your job, your passion. But it's never too late to just ignore politics if it makes you unhappy. That's what the hippies were doing in the very late 60s, early 70s. You know, the get back to the land movement, drop out. They weren't happy with how it was going, so they split. That's what they used to say. Let's split. That's what half the cable news audience did after the election? That's enough. They turned it off. All the ratings collapsed. Those cable news channels used to have 20 million viewers every night in prime time. Now it's down to about 3 million for all of them combined. Just 8 years ago, 20 million combined cable news audience. And the bulk of the audience, 65 and over. They're retired. They watch 40 hours of television a week. If politics is your job, that's different. There's a reason politics uses the war crusade terminology, campaign. It's war. It's on purpose and it's on a schedule. It's a blood sport, but the blood is mostly in everybody's eyes from not sleeping, from too much booze and amphetamines and red-eye flights, and trying to get the candidate to remember the name of this current city they're in. Politics is, as the late Hunter S. Thompson put it, better than sex. Being on the campaign trail, the adrenaline of another daily outrage, the great build-up to the day of the contest. And then, the 3 months it takes to count the votes in California. The Sunday before the election, I looked at the trending topics on Twitter, and they were all about football games. Every single trending topic. Football players, football games, everyone. And I thought, that's how it should be. Let people have a weekend off. Let people care about what they're interested in. Vote on election day if they want and enjoy the game on the TV on the weekend. I've been writing this episode for so long. When I started this script, Joe Biden was still president.
The Sierra Nevada is a barrier. And little moisture finds its way over the mountains into the great dry valleys that lie below. Sprawling across some 20,000 square miles of California and Nevada is the Mojave Desert. Once this was a region of clear water lakes. They began to dry up over 20,000 years ago. Since then, man has been unwelcome here. Yet many have come. In boom days, some men sought fortunes here. In 1849, the great gold rush to California began. Pioneers crossed this part of the Mojave Desert in wagons and on foot. Most of them made it. Some of them didn't. They called it Death Valley. Rising above temperatures that have reached 190 degrees on the surface, a hawk soars above the heat of the day. Beneath is a barren wasteland. The appearance of a coyote on the salt flats surprises Fletcher. Neither man nor beast belong here. The pupfish have adapted to water temperatures that reach that of seawater. Isolated and imprisoned in the salt flats in a span of only 2,000 years, and on the bodies of their dead. Two things are in short supply. Fletcher buried water jugs at strategic intervals. Even in April, they're called mustangers. Once, when wild horses were abundant, they made a precarious living rounding up mounts fewer mustangers. But for them, it's still a way to work doors.
Hey, well, we've got a few anyhow. No. Not bad here.
Their capture and removal by these wranglers to the ecological balance of the area.
I'm going with him, John. Look out, Lane.
Some naturalists feel the burrows have a rightful place in Death Valley and have become an integral part of its ecology.
A lot of people seem to be very much against burrows. They just don't like them.
This is really pretty close. Those two over there are named Rough Coat and Gus. Top teeth.
Has yet to find any reason to deny them their further existence. Okay. Early travelers across the Mojave described its desolation. For a few weeks each spring, north and west from Death Valley, the White Mountains rise to over 14,000 feet. Above 10,000 feet, there are trees that have remained stubbornly rooted for over 40 centuries. The bristlecone pines. The age of the oldest living bristlecone pine has been established at 4,600 years. From as far away as Los Angeles, it has already crippled and killed when this was a region of trees and shrubs, when the wind was cool and wet, when game was plentiful and water abundant. Here's a last testament of a vanished people. These drawings are relics of a culture lost to the desert. Who made them, or why? There is only speculation. And the bighorn sheep was their primary prey.
Amboy to Zizix, broadcasting across the Great Mojave Wilderness. This is Desert Oracle Radio with the soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Visit our website at desertoracle.com. Thanks to our listeners and supporters who keep this show alive at patreon.com/Desert Oracle. I hope you all have a good Thanksgiving wherever you are. Even if you're in Canada, where American Thanksgiving is still illegal. I realize some of our listeners are sort of solitary types, and it gets a bit much to have all these relatives and friends and whoever talking and hanging around and having fun. So I'll tell you a good way to clear out for a while. Just say, it's time for your walk. Like you're a dog. And you take yourself on a walk. Oh, and maybe your hot step cousin is there too. The one you haven't seen in 5 years. And you both go on a walk, and then it's like a little date. Not a real cousin. Nobody knows for sure. There's probably an actual dog that needs walking too. Nobody remembers to walk the dog on Thanksgiving. They're so busy doing everything else. So, take yourself for a walk, take the dog for a walk, get some fresh air, and then you can come back inside again. And oh no, now they're screaming and yelling at the football game. All right, you can take one more walk. Walk down to the bar on Old Main Street, the one you used to sneak into as a kid. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, it's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM. Next, we go back to December 1st, 2017. Ken has some strong opinions about why certain news agencies choose their stories. This one is called Desert Crackpots and the Rocket of Amboy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the Mojave, and because there is rarely much in the way of national news from the desert wilderness,
when some weird little story does manage to capture a fleeting position on the American news cycle, it must adhere to certain notions about the desert. It must feature a crackpot of some kind, the more obvious the better, but always on the relatively harmless scale. Neo-Nazis taking over a forgotten desert town, now that's lacking in fun. They'll get their front page profile in the New York Times eventually, but such stories must pretend to be somber while also squirming merrily in the filth of humanity. You want some crank who believes, say, in Bigfoot or the gold standard or whatever. You want a dryly sarcastic headline, or at least you'll try for it. Words are hard to manage these days when everybody hears them as differing types of code. You need your desert crackpot story to reinforce the city people idea of the desert as some vast, uncontrolled landscape where anybody can do anything, instead of being what it is. A massive and unwieldy patchwork of public land and private real estate and bioregions layered over with ever-clashing corporate and environmental interest, off-road motorcycle manufacturers and strip miners, state and federal and county municipalities, tribal reservations, wildlife preserves, national parks, conservation easements, forests, watersheds, rivers and aquifers, wildfire-prone woodlands of Joshua tree and juniper and pinyon and invasive weeds, feral burrows abandoned by hard rock miners, wild Mustang herds that date from the time of the conquistadors. Desert rivers dammed to become enormous evaporation ponds, with bathtub rings upon the ancient canyon walls. Military bases and test ranges and combat training centers, sagebrush plains pockmarked with missile silos, homestead cabins and railroad lines. One scrawny river bringing much of the water to most of the settlements across a half dozen states in both America and Mexico. That's all a little complicated. That's not as romantic. That's not as free and beautiful as we'd like to imagine. The 320 million of us mostly crowded together in the cities and suburbs of these United States. And so the rental car full of 25-year-olds arrives in the twisted fairy tale land of the high desert, and there's a dirt road. A real life dirt road, like on the TV. And they all get out and pose for phone pictures, and they hoot and holler like a family of orcs finally out of prison. And we're mostly all so boxed up in apartments and traffic and office parks that we, or they anyway, can almost be forgiven for mistaking a 100-foot dirt driveway for a mythical American dirt road, can almost be forgiven for mistaking the humble desert home at the end of that driveway as a free desert photo background for Instagram shots. Never mind the agitated people now coming out of that humble desert home, shotguns pointed at the interlopers, pit bulls straining at the end of fraying ropes. And so the news this week brought a Mojave Desert tale that fits the parameters of a desert newspaper feature, a more or less harmless crackpot decides to test his crackpot belief, the flat earth in this case, by performing some spectacle for the sole benefit of whatever TV news crew and regional bureau chief gets the assignment to go out to the desert to watch. In this case, according to the article I glanced over after many of you sent it my way, the flat earth crackpot would launch some kind of primitive rocket from some dry lake bed somewhere to prove whatever he was trying to prove. Such things have little to do with the desert, whether you are a human resident or a bobcat, a roadrunner or a gamble's quail, a tarantula or a guitar player. There are cheap spectacles, modern medicine shows, the huckster and the hucked, performing for each other, and then they send it out to the world as if it was real. This particular shuck is the idea of one Mike Hughes, who apparently lives in a broken-down motorhome that was, this week, parked in the vicinity of Amboy, California, in the surrounding Mojave Trails National Monument, where old Route 66 winds through the desert and alongside Amboy Crater, where the now-deceased Charles Manson certainly did not grow up, as various semi-illiterate and deeply confused internet forum members claim. New sounds on the program tonight by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. As often happens in these situations, claims that this rocket stunt had approval from the Bureau of Land Management, the agency that is responsible for the 1.6 million acres of Mojave Trails National Monument, proved to be untrue. The BLM regional office in Barstow had heard nothing of this project or their alleged granting of verbal permission until the feature stories began pouring out like raw sewage from a busted septic tank in the week before Thanksgiving. By last weekend, the second act had begun, and right there on the front page of the Washington Post was a follow-up article following up with what had not changed. Mr. Hughes had no permits or permission to launch his scrap metal rocket. It seems like something the reporters could have checked out the first time around. The Bureau of Land Management is not difficult to reach. Lord knows I write and call them fairly often over at the Barstow office to request occasional law enforcement and ranger patrols of the orphaned BLM parcels within the not-quite town of Joshua Tree and right up against hundreds of homes. You can stop by the big BLM office in Barstow during business hours to do anything from request a permit for a particular activity or ask about good places for rock hounding or wilderness camping, or to pick up some of the BLM's famous maps of our western lands, beautiful maps. I've got about 100 here at Desert Oracle headquarters. Well, having noticed the flurry of coverage regarding a planned rocket launch on public lands that was previously unknown to the managers of said public lands, the BLM office was compelled to contact some of these reporters and make it known that Mr. Hughes had no such permission and had not sought it either. Mr. Hughes and the classic desert shuck immediately changed his story and blamed not his tale of having verbal permission, but the reliable old saw of the begrudged middle-aged American man telling the Washington Post, "This is what happens anytime you have to deal with any kind of government agency." Imagine if the Washington Post showed the same curiosity about actual public controversies and outrages in the Mojave Desert. It was in this follow-up story under the byline of two reporters that finally looked a little more closely at this huckster and the ridiculous nutjob internet subculture he had only recently attached himself to like a barnacle. The flat earth angle was a late addition. A late addition to a previously failed attempt to raise money for this character's rocket launch on Kickstarter. The very slightly less seedy version of that broken-hearted symbol of American sorrow and grift, the begging website called GoFundMe. Having raised only $310 of his $150,000 goal, Mr. Hughes made a low-balance conversion to the Flat Earth cult and has so far collected more than $8,000 on his GoFundMe webpage. But it turns out that even a very bad homemade manned rocket cost more than that to briefly get it off the ground or explode trying. So the current shuck is unlikely to raise Mr. Hughes to the level of the people he considers his lesser peers, the billionaires who own their own rocket companies and routinely launch said rockets. There was an eccentric aviation man in the past, a man with the same name in the last century, but it appears unlikely that Howard Hughes and Hughes Aviation will lose their place in aerospace history to this current character, Mike Hughes, of the broken-down motorhome. Exactly how a very low-altitude, steam-powered rocket launch would prove the Earth was flat is one of those things that never troubles the mind of an idiot. Reaching a height of 1,800 feet. 1,800 feet above the ground, well, that could be achieved with much less rigmarole by walking up a nearby mountain, which would at least provide a pleasant day hike for the participant. If flight was truly the goal, there are a half dozen drones on Amazon in the $500 range with altitude ranges higher than 1,800 feet. He probably could have found a refurbished model with the $310 he initially raised on Kickstarter. Or to really push the limits of aviation, he could have bought a $100 Southwest Airlines ticket from Burbank or Ontario to Las Vegas. No one knows for sure, but people say those 737s routinely travel at altitudes of 35,000 or 40,000 feet back and forth, airport to airport, day in and day out. And if you survived such a harrowing flight through the stratosphere, well, once you got to Vegas, you could go to that Stratosphere Lounge, which at 1,149 feet high is the tallest observational tower in the United States and nearly up to Mike Hughes' highest hopes without even taking flight at all. Now, could any of that possibly have anything to do with proving some dingbat position fished from the great toilet we call the internet? No, but why spoil one of these tales with a half teaspoon of common sense? We live in a time of belligerent stupidity. The morons aren't just quietly shuffling around behind the liquor store talking to the dumpster again. They're right up in your face, day in and day out. A nation of half-wit hucksters and hired goons. Just the worst offender on a world full of scam artists and dumbos. So it is a lot of dumb nonsense, and everybody involved, especially the reporters and editors, should be deeply ashamed. Our Desert Oracle correspondent did go by the motorhome converted into a scrap metal rocket launcher parked on the side of the highway outside of Amboy earlier this week. The launch, of course, was canceled. The human argument for setting aside vast stretches of the American desert as parks and preserves and wilderness and plain open space always includes the importance of unspoiled vistas. As the only real difference between Las Vegas and Death Valley is that we made a strategic decision to fill one with casino hotels and insurance company headquarters and neighborhoods, while leaving the other more or less intact for the mutual benefit of humanity and the plants and creatures and ecosystems in such a mostly wild place. But as a species, we are making ourselves increasingly crazy. Few of us chose this path that was chosen for you, imposed on you, imposed upon me, assaulted day and night by advertisements, industrial noises, honking cars, jabbering buffoons, the sirens night and day, text notifications, software updates. Remind me tomorrow is the usual choice when the only real answer you want is no, never, go away and leave me alone for once. These vast open spaces are all we've got left. We need more of them, lots more. They are the steam valves for humanity. The places we need to recharge our soul, to open up our shriveled hearts a bit. To be quiet, to watch the birds gaze upon the mountain ranges, turn off the TV, turn off the noise, if only for a little while. Edward Abbey said wilderness is not solely for the animals and plants and rocks and sky, but for the people, for us. And not just for the upstanding citizens in their Subaru with a National Park Foundation bumper sticker and the license plate frame that says, "I support public radio." Wilderness is where the outlaws go, if they can. And because you cannot legislate the philosophical or spiritual quality of an outlaw, I believe Barry Goldwater said that, sometimes the outlaw might be Jesus, and sometimes it might be Castro, and sometimes it's George O'Keefe, and sometimes it's Charles Manson. But Charlie is gone now, and his heirs are fighting over his corpse, so I've heard. I'll say rest in peace, Charlie, not to be nice, but because peace is the last thing he wanted. And he made it another couple of years, who knows? He could maybe win the White House in 2020. Why not? Where's the bottom? We are not quite there, but an optimist could say we are getting pretty close. As an optimist myself, I want as much of the planet set aside as possible, so that when it all comes crashing down in a couple of months or perhaps a couple of years, we will have something left to enjoy, a place to start anew, maybe. Optimism is a complicated business. But we will need to get over a particular hurdle if we expect to be around in future generations or maybe even in future decades. And that hurdle, well, the experts say that hurdle is human cruelty in the form of greed and seething hatred, a rancid combination that we usually keep to the fringes of humanity, usually. Just the other day, I noticed an interesting sight on the trail. Something I've come across now and then, but that always retains a wild strangeness. There were many paw prints from a big cat, one of our local mountain lions. And the prints stretched out where the cat made its last charge, and then the ground was all tamped down in a tight half circle with tufts of jackrabbit fur stuck in the Mormon tee here and there at the edge of the wash. You could see the bowl-shaped depression in the sand, like somebody dropped a big round rock from above. This is where the cat nabbed the hare and smacked it down upon the ground, killing it instantly. No blood or bones remained, just a bit of the gray and tawny and white fur. The cat likely headed off somewhere private, behind the boulders perhaps, maybe all the way back to its den, to dine upon the hare. The violence was matter of fact. There was no sign of torture, not like with our mentally damaged house cats, not like our mentally damaged human selves. No sign of hate, no sign of anger, no sign of resentment. It is strange that our species needed to develop these particular pathologies. Necessary to our evolution, perhaps, but still bewildering, as it has been since Cain cruelly slaughtered his only brother, Abel. The brothers who were the alleged spawn of that mythological first couple in the Garden of Eden. When we left that garden for civilization, we became monsters. But we are very close now to the end of toiling in the fields. Just two centuries ago, 72% of Americans worked on farms. Today, with less American land under cultivation, but so much more food being produced, less than 2% of Americans work the land. We are not needed for most of the old farm chores. It was reported this week that nearly 1 billion jobs on Earth will vanish in the next 12 years as the machines and the robots take on a never-ending share of human labor. It is completely within existing science and technology to feed and clothe and house the entire world population in relative comfort, to shut off the last engines fueled by ancient carbon muck, to begin the reversal of the high carbon levels in the atmosphere that are the reason, if not the cause, for our rapidly warming planet. The cause, of course, is greed. The resentment and the hate protects the greed. It feeds it, allowing our human race to batter and debase itself and its only home. I look forward to a trip to Mars one day to walk its desert mountains, to see its blue sunrise and red noonday skies. But I prefer this trip be for pleasure rather than survival. I intend, to live out my allotted years here on the fine planet made available to us by chance or design. But if we do not make a serious correction in the very, 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 very near future, then we're going to get that video game big screen apocalypse we spend so much time consuming as entertainment, and we're going to get it for real. A fun thing to remember about such entertainments is the hero, or the first-person shooter, or the people in the road, is that they exist in a land where nearly everyone else is dead. You're dead. Your dog is dead. Your children are dead. Your friends are dead. You might have killed your friends. You might have killed your children. You might have eaten your own dead mother, the way that crazed child found in the Donner Party cabin had reportedly done. During a winter of unbearable cold and darkness has surely felt like eternity. That was eternity for those who died there. Those who became food for their children. Here in the desert, we have a wonderful wild gourd called the coyote melon. They grow on big, long, green vines you'll recognize if you've ever grown summer squash in your garden. And when they've dried on the vine, they make fine percussion instruments and household decorations. Coyotes eat a lot more plants and seeds than is commonly thought, and they'll eat the bitter but nutrient-rich coyote melon, too. If there's nothing better around. The desert scavenger class includes the coyote, sometimes, and the raven much of the time, and it always includes the buzzard, the turkey vulture, that dark-winged cousin of the giant condor. I like to consult Dr. Yeager at the start of each desert season to be reminded of all the interesting observations he made about our desert friends. And I also like to remember that Dr. Yeager was a world-class misogynist, hating the female gender with such precision that he refused to allow women to attend his famed desert gatherings. The Desert Palaver. You know, the more I learn about the Edmund Yeager Palaver, the happier I am to have missed them. Because Dr. Yeager not only prohibited women at his palavers, but also alcohol and also smoke of any kind. Well, I like to be holed up alone in the desert as much as anyone, but if you can't enjoy the company of women or the enjoyment of a taste of wine around the fire, it seems like you might be traveling with a few too many rules weighing you down. Next week, we will enjoy a visit with the Joshua Tree artist, Kate McCabe. So do tune into the program at 10 o'clock Friday nights on KCDZ 107.7 FM in the Mojave High Desert. And whenever you want it, on the iTunes and the Stitcher and Podbay, and tune in or stream it live right off the Z107.7 FM website. Do stop by our website at desertoracle.com for various information on our radio show and our occasionally quarterly pocket field guide to the intriguing American Southwest Desert Oracle. We invite you to sit around the campfire with us next week, Thursday, December 7, Pearl Harbor Day, in the Grove at the Commune at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. Free to attend, liquor on sale at the bar if you like a little nip now and again. Around and across the Mojave from Amboy to Zizek's and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, the Christmas Stroll in Bozeman is coming up December 7th, 2024, from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. So you might want to make arrangements to attend that. It's kind of fun. And also, KGVM is having a Christmas fundraiser on December 14th, 2024. We got the Love Darts, the Dead Yellers, the Big Blonde, Dave King Ropes, and Taylor Wallace. Doors open at 7 p.m. at the Labor Temple, 422 East Mendenhall, and there's a $15 suggested donation. Have fun at that one. Well, this week, I am really grateful to my doctor and his team for their work on my eye. Thanks to friends, family, and funny videos that kept my spirits up. Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to everyone that volunteers and supports KGVM. And thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday nights and 9 a.m. Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.